Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you all, wherever you are listening to us from. Welcome to this edition of DW's Africa Link program. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon visits South Sudan to revive a shaky peace deal.
Peace above politics, personal compromise, overcome obstacles, establish transitional government of national unity.
African leaders are in Burundi to push for talks to end the country's political crisis.
Every of the five regions is represented here. So we are all here just to support the peace process that's going on in this country.
And for these stories, stay tuned to Africa Link.
Top story.
Let's begin in South Sudan, where the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon was on Thursday to hold talks with President Salva Kiir. His visit came at a time when the government of South Sudan said that a threat of U.S. sanctions should be directed at the rebels and not the presidency. The U.S. has threatened to effect sanctions to South Sudan government should they fail to deliver on a peace deal. As James Ishmanyo reports, the UN chief's visit to South Sudan coincides with reports of renewed intensified fighting in two regions separately controlled by Kiir and Machar.
The United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has concluded a one-day crucial visit to South Sudan, his second visit since the country became independent from the North in July 2011. Ban's visit comes at a time when President Salva Kiir and his longtime political rival Riek Machar have delayed three times to form a transitional government of national unity, flouting the agreement they signed in August last year. Machar has persistently said he will arrive in Juba to be part of the government only if 3,000 of his troops and police are officially allowed to take strategic positions in the capital city, as well as the deployment of 1,200 police officers in the greater Upper Nile region comprising the oil-rich Malakal and Bentiu states. Speaking at a press conference in Juba, UN Chief Ban Ki-moon decried the suffering of people of South Sudan due to political wrangling by Salva Kiir and Machar. Ban minced no words when he sent this strong message to the two leaders.
Put peace above politics, personal compromise, overcome obstacles, establish transitional government of national unity. In many ways, it begins with the signing of agreement, and it must begin now.
The UN Secretary General disclosed the amount of money required to avert the worsening humanitarian and economic situation in South Sudan.
The humanitarian and economic situation in the country continues to plummet. Over $1.3 billion is needed to address current needs of over 5 million South Sudanese this year alone. I commend humanitarians for their work and courage. Despite assurances for safe and unhindered access in the peace agreement, aid workers continue to be targeted. 45 aid workers have been killed over the last 2 years, and many more are missing.
Concluding his speech in Juba, Ban Ki-moon made the following important announcement.
I'm announcing today that the United Nations will allocate $21 million from our Central Emergency Response Fund for the people of South Sudan. I urge the international community to show its commitment to the people of South Sudan.
Before the UN chief spoke at the Juba press conference, he held private talks with his host, President Salva Kiir. Disclosing what transpired in the meeting between the UN chief and President Kiir regarding the implementation of the peace agreement, South Sudan Information Minister Barnaba Marielle Benjamin had this to say.
President assured him of his commitment to implement this agreement. The Secretary General also assured the President that he will urge Riek Machar to come as soon as possible. The transitional government of national unity can be formed. They also touched on the humanitarian issues, which the President assured the Secretary General that all the humanitarian agencies will all be given free access to deliver food in all the areas of South Sudan that need relief.
James Shimanyula filed that report from Nairobi. But how significant is Ban Ki-moon's visit to South Sudan? For more analysis, my colleague Jen Ayeko spoke to Douglas Johnson, an independent scholar and expert on Sudan.
Well, it is significant in this respect. The UN mission to South Sudan has been given the mandate to protect civilians. And recently, this has been extremely difficult. There was fighting in Malakal. There's been fighting in Pibor. There are continued clashes between forces of the government and the opposition, as well as other opportunistic fighting of groups that have armed themselves. So the UN has a mandate, but it doesn't have the resources or the ability to protect civilians or to monitor a proper cessation of hostilities that would enable the government and the opposition to begin to form a transitional government of national unity. So I think that Ban Ki-moon's visit must be dealing with these challenges to the UN mission in South Sudan, and whether he can make any movement in that regard, as especially in regard to the threat of sanctions on both parties if they fail to live up to their agreement, he might be able to make some progress as far as that is concerned.
Well, we're seeing that both parties are getting softer at each other and expressing willingness to work together. Could this be inspired by the fall of oil prices, such that the parties see continued fighting as a loss? Or what could explain this?
I'm sure that the collapse of South Sudan's economy is one of the reasons why they're beginning to make rather more positive statements about what they will do. Also, I think one has to see that the fighting, the war itself, has gone beyond control of the leaders. And there's going to be a massive problem for the leadership on both sides to be able to rein in the conflict so that there can be some reconstruction and reconciliation throughout South Sudan.
But there is still lingering violence in the country, and some camps have recently suffered attacks. What does this tell us about the future of the country and restoration of peace?
What it tells us is that the restoration of peace is going to be very difficult and will need the commitment of the leaders of the government and of the opposition to really get down to thinking of how they can rein in the violence, how they can cooperate with international agencies such as the UN mission, Médecins Sans Frontières, and various other agencies that have been dealing with the civilian population, the civilian casualties of this fighting. It's going to have to be a very concentrated national effort on the part of South Sudanese, but in collaboration and cooperation with international agencies.
That was Douglas Johnson, an expert on Sudan, speaking to my colleague Jen Ayeko.
Follow the changes sweeping across Africa. For analysis and in-depth reports, tune in to Deutsche Welle's Africa Link every morning, Monday to Friday.
Now, a delegation of five African leaders are in Burundi's capital Bujumbura on a two-day visit to push for talks aimed at ending the political crisis in the country. The visit comes just days after the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon visited Burundi in efforts to end a 10-month-old crisis in the Central African country. Representing the African Union, the delegation is headed by South African President Jacob Zuma and includes the leaders of Ethiopia, Gabon, Mauritania, and Senegal. From Bujumbura, Apollinaire Nyora brings us more.
The African Union delegation currently in Burundi has strongly reaffirmed the need for negotiations to restore peace in Burundi. Headed by South African President Jacob Zuma, the delegation is here to force President Nkurunziza and the opposition to come to a round table for the good of their country. South African Foreign Minister Maite Nkuana Mashabane emphasized the need for Burundi to move forward.
There will be no development without peace and security, and there will be no peace and security if there's no development. But in this instance here, is that moving on post-elections, what do the people of Burundi want? All the parties that are here and are involved in the peace process, I'm talking about Burundi, will be engaged by the high-level panel.
The five-member AU delegation has members from the five regions of Africa. They include Mauritanian President Mohamed Ould Abdelaziz, Senegalese President Macky Sall, Gabon's Ali Bongo Ondimba, and Ethiopian Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn. The delegation was designated by the AU summit held at the end of January to come to Burundi to eyewitness the country's crisis and suggest possible solutions. Minister Maite Nkuana said their message is that of peace.
Every of the five regions is represented here. So we are all here just to support the peace process that's going on in this country. Since our arrival yesterday, we see that indeed they've made progress and that there's willingness to move on with the peace process.
Meanwhile, Burundian External Relations and International Cooperation Minister Alain Emenyamitwe reiterated the government's refusal to negotiate with non-peaceful actors.
We still have a few issues with a number of actors who've involved themselves into activities that are completely in contradiction with Resolution 2248, which, as you recall, has called the government and all interested peaceful stakeholders. So peaceful is a key word here. People who've tried to overthrow the government, people who have formed rebel groups to overthrow the government. I don't think that they have a platform here.
Earlier, the spokesman of the opposition UPRONA, Tassien Sibomana, told me that negotiations offered the best option.
It's not up to the government to determine parties in negotiations because it is itself a party in conflict. Therefore, it cannot be judge and be party. For us, what is important is that this government accepts negotiations.
The AU delegation will also meet various stakeholders, including political actors, the civil society, and religious groups.
Apollinaire Niyora in Bujumbura, Burundi.
Human rights.
In this week's human rights segment, we look at student protests in South Africa, which are increasingly becoming violent. This week has seen clashes between black and white students at the universities of Pretoria and Free State. At least three universities closed on Thursday after a new wave of student protests where buildings were set ablaze over high tuition fees, allegations of racism, and a dispute over the use of the Afrikaans language. Subri Govinda reports.
The sound of students protesting at the Free State University. There, a group of white students and their supporters attacked black students who ran onto a sports field during an inter-varsity rugby match. The black students were agitating against what they call the exploitation of black workers and the culture of racism they claim still haunts the university. In a video that has gone viral, white students are seen kicking a black student who was down on his hands and knees. At the University of Pretoria, a white student talking to a group of black students was suddenly slapped in the face by a person wearing a red uniform. The black students want the Afrikaans language to be dropped, while white students say this is an attack on their culture. There have been other incidents at other centers of higher learning. Black students say there is still a need for transformation from the culture of white domination to one where all students and people are treated equally. Here are some of their complaints.
And now we find ourselves in a situation whereby the project of reconciliation has completely collapsed at the University of the Free State.
The black workers are still subjected to inferiority on campuses. They are still subjected to poor salaries. They are still subjected to poor working conditions. We cannot allow that as the students.
This war on racism, 22 years has been far too long. So all these campuses must change their language policy. The minimum of instruction in the country must strictly be in English. Translation must happen to all other languages that are demanded by those students in there.
White African students see this differently. They believe very strongly that in the new democratic South Africa, they have a right to continue to receive their education in Afrikaans. A spokesperson for the AfriForum student organization, Enrico Barnard, says the campaign, Afrikaans Must Fall, is a direct attack on the very existence of their Afrikaans culture.
Now, if you make statements like this, it's very difficult not to anger the language group of Afrikaans-speaking students. We came a long road last year and we joined hands to fight for education, as education is the key to actually unite this country and to get us to go forward.
But there are also students, black and white, who believe that the new South Africa belongs to all who live in it and that Nelson Mandela would be saddened by what is now happening at universities. They have held joint peace demonstrations to promote unity and peace.
We've come so far as a country, so now today we're making a stand and say, you know what, we can take hands, black, white, together. Yeah, this thing is, this skin is just skin deep, it's 2 millimeter deep. It's a sacred thing that God gave us. How dare we now, because of language, say, no, there's racism, etc., etc. It's become a race issue now.
I think there are right platforms within the university in which these matters have to be addressed. But to come and vandalize property and to speak evil of one another, we do not think it's the right thing. We need to make our stand very clear. We are here to unite the country. Yeah.
Professor Cheryl D. La Rey from the University of Pretoria says they want to ensure that academic activities can continue without any problems.
We have an ongoing process of transformation at the university, including looking at the transformation of our institutional culture. And a key issue for us when it comes to the curriculum is how do we foster social cohesion.
Meanwhile, the government has announced that it will provide a further 18 billion rand to assist needy students, but whether this will help stem the current protests is unclear.
Subri Govinda reporting from South Africa. Now, on Sunday, the 21st February, Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe turned 92. A huge party estimated to cost $1 million, that is, close to 900,000 euros, is being planned to celebrate the birthday of the veteran leader tomorrow. The festivity is going on when more than 3 million people are in need of food assistance following one of the worst droughts affecting the country in recent years. From Harare, Privilege Mushandiri filed this report on the forthcoming birthday bash.
On the 21st of February, we celebrate President Robert Gabriel Mugabe's 92nd birthday and say thank you, Bob.
The state-controlled media has been running jingles and advertorials to congratulate President Robert Mugabe. Having turned 92 on Sunday 21 February, Mugabe, who has ruled Zimbabwe for 35 years, currently holds the record for the world's oldest president. His supporters will host a $1 million party for him tomorrow. Mugabe will cut his cake and blow candles at a birthday bash which will be held in Masvingo, 300 kilometers south of the capital Harare. It has not escaped notice that the birthday party will be held in a province which is also one of the areas worst hit by the El Nino-induced drought. Hosting an expensive celebration at a time when the nation is facing a severe drought is being viewed as cruel. Political analyst Pedzisai Ruhanya says Mugabe is an insensitive leader.
Mugabe is just interested in the preservation of political power, not in the transforming of people's lives. He's a selfish, parochial, and individualistic person.
Zimbabwe has asked for $1.5 billion from the international community to feed more than 3 million people who are facing hunger. A cross-section of people from Mugabe's birthday bash host city who spoke to DW felt disappointed by the idea of having a feast amid his hungry people.
Of all the provinces, to me it's just mockery to just have a birthday party in a province which is actually literally crumbling because of drought.
I think it's a matter of misplaced priorities. They could have maybe chosen to buy food for the people who are starving in Masvingo province instead of coming here to hold such unnecessary celebrations.
1 million is a lot of money. It could have purchased a lot of food for people who can go for 3 or a week without meals.
Mugabe's supporters have a different view and vow that they would celebrate come what may in honor of the heroic exploits of the veteran leader. I asked the ZANU-PF youth leader, Poporai Togarepi, if this was not being insensitive to people who are hungry.
We are appreciating. It's not a party. We are celebrating the life of a person that has brought, who has brought so much good to his country. This celebration has been there during drought years. It has been there even in the bamba harvest. And we are going to celebrate this day even during a war environment, because to us it's critical.
Mugabe's birthday is celebrated annually under the banner of the 21st February movement. His party says this is meant to motivate Zimbabwe's youth by getting them to observe heroic milestones in the life of the nonagenarian president.
That was Privilege Mushani reporting about President Robert Mugabe's birthday bash.
Your say.
And it's that day and time of the week when we turn the microphone to you, the listener, to hear what you say about the stories that we've been covering for both radio and online. Jane Yingi joins me with some of the comments.
Well, let's begin in Burundi. And as you've just heard in one of our reports, five African leaders have followed the footsteps of the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon to call for peace in the country. It is a story that we've been covering since Ban Ki-moon's visit, and we got lots of reactions.
So what are some of the comments we have from that?
Our regular listener, Leo Mohammed from Nigeria, says, I hope Nkurunziza will make a commendable move by agreeing to the terms passed during the forthcoming dialogue that will bring peace in Burundi. France Gongo from Tanzania thinks that the reason countries like Burundi continue to be involved in political turmoil is because most of the African leaders believe that leadership is eternal. Peacekeepers must be allowed in Burundi and restore peace.
Okay, away from conflict, what else is trending?
From a street thug to a role model is the story of Samuel Kapepo, who grew up an orphan on the streets of Namibian capital Windhoek. It was a life marked by poverty and crime. But Samuel turned his life around and now runs a project that feeds hundreds of children, many of them orphans. Leonard Taylor wrote to us and said, finally, the media has focused on positive Africans. Abdilu Torre says, may the Almighty continue to protect them and guide him in what he does.
Very, very inspiring indeed. And any other story in that category?
Yes, of course, Eunice. This is about a young Tanzanian schoolgirl called Eva Tolange, who wrote to President Obama, and part of her letter says, I would like to ask, what will you and the global leaders do to ensure that every single girl in my village and Africa has a better access to clean water?
Did Obama's office write back to her?
Barack Obama actually responded, and two NGOs have already started the hashtag #StandWithEva petition. And apart from the hashtag, Abula Jackson wrote on our Facebook page and said, I support her because water is life. Francine Viate is asking, what are African leaders doing to better the lives of their own people?
That's a courageous move right there. Well, thanks, Jane. And in case you'd like to comment on the stories that we cover, send an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, a letter to AfricaLink, DW53110, Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code 49160957595510.
Thanks indeed, Eunice and Jane. And before we call it a weekend, here's a reminder of our main stories. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon tells warring parties in South Sudan to choose peace over politics. Five African leaders are in Burundi to push for talks to end the political crisis in the country. And we've also heard of how the students' protests in South Africa are becoming increasingly violent. Do join us again on Monday. I'm Isaac Mugabe, and on behalf of the entire team, have a splendid weekend.